Small world, big data.
You have devices that are attached to Alexa that you're not even aware of, okay? And so how do you disconnect something that you don't know is connected?
Hi, Mike Matchett with Small World Big Data, and we are here with this week's episode of the IT Weekly Newsletter, Tech Top 6, in which we review Warren Avery and I, the chief editor of the IT Weekly Newsletter. We review this week's hand-picked top 6 technical articles. Welcome, Warren.
Mike, always a pleasure calling back there to nice Boston. We're out here in Arizona where it's a nice toasty 109 degrees yesterday. So,
yeah, you're still struggling there with some heat. I understand it's probably only going to get hotter as the years go by.
I just looked. We're not going to get below 100 until October 3rd.
I know. I read something the other day with climate change. You might have over half the year at above 95 degrees or something.
I can handle the heat. When it gets below 80, Mike, I got to break out my winter coats, my mucklucks, my gloves, my hat, my earmuffs. I cannot handle anything under 80 degrees. It's just not going to happen. So,
well, you wouldn't be happy here in the Boston, New England area. We are already wearing fleeces, although I've got my house shirt on today. The furnace is on, actually, already. So we are burning oil to heat the house.
And I am really going to enjoy talking to you around Christmas time when you're minus 300 degrees and I got a nice 85-degree day here in Arizona.
I'm hurting. All right. So there are some changes afoot. You know, we all talked about disasters. This has been a theme since we started doing this podcast. Disasters big and small. And you've run into some problems and some solutions you're finding with cable connectivity in the work from home era, which doesn't at first sound like a big problem. You call the cable company and they come fix it. But with kids going back to school and everybody working from home becoming more tethered to that thin little wire that's going to the cable company, it's become much more important to have availability, 100% availability,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Tell us just a little briefly about what's going on with your cable.
I switched over from Cox Business to Cox Residential, and it turns out I had two internets coming to my house at the same time, both of them looking for a unique modem ID, and it turns out they were stepping on each other. So I spent 6 hours on support. I went from Cox to Geek Squad to Netgear back to Cox. So I know all about Cox level one support. Everybody's level one, level two support. This is one of those Saskatchewan hats. Slowly I turn step by step, but let's not even go in there, Mike. But anyway, it's fixed.
And now you are halfway certified to be your own network engineer, which is cool. That's great. So we are going to jump into the articles here. And at the end of the episode, we'll tell you how to subscribe for free to what's becoming more of a daily feed of the top tech articles that you're curating into the IT Weekly Newsletter.
It's going to be a great way to stay current. We've made it a lot simpler for everybody. So.
All right. So change of foot. You know, you've got some pain and it causes you to evolve and optimize and come up with even a better offering and service for people. This is great. Our first article today is about Bluetooth. And of course, we've been talking about security a lot. It seems to be, you know, the big thing between zero trust and multi-factor authentication and different ways of this. But now Bluetooth has a problem, Warren. What could possibly go wrong with Bluetooth? We rely on that.
It turns out, Mike, it's an article called New Unpatched Bluetooth Flaw Lets Hackers Easily Target Nearby Devices. And it's out of a source called the Hacker News. And Mike, how many of us ever turn off our Bluetooth? We get up and it's on all the time. And we never even think about all the devices that are around us. Well, it turns out the bad guys have found a problem that was discovered simultaneously by two different groups. And there actually is a CVE tracker associated with this flaw. And what this flaw does is allow a bad guy who is near a Bluetooth 4.0 or a 5.0 to allow unauthorized pairing of your device. Now, it turns out that they've contacted all the companies that are making these affected devices, and they're working on a patch to get it out. So if you see something that comes out about patching your Bluetooth, upload that patch because it'll allow an unauthorized pairing. And then once they get into it, you're open to all sorts of problems. So it's out there right now and everybody's aware of it. They just got to get a fix for it.
Just real quickly, what is a CVE?
I didn't put the number in it because they're sending out the messages. But if you go to this article, Unpatched Bluetooth, it actually has the CVE number that you can take a look at it and read it right there.
All right, I understand that stands for Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures, which is kind of like where you record, you know, things like security vulnerabilities, and it's a public list in some cases, and you can go look those up, CVE. All right, so this article is going to be found in IT Weekly Newsletter under Bluetooth, but if you type in Bluetooth on the search, you're going to find about 16 articles. If you want to find this one in particular, we're calling it Blurtooth, B-L-U-R-tooth, and that's either spelled out or as one word.
And that's actually what the flaw is called.
Oh, the Blurtooth flaw.
That's why we put that keyword in there.
All right, which is kind of interesting. So those of us who have 18 Bluetooth devices and wandering around and go jogging with our Bluetooth headphones and Bluetooth open on our smartphones and stuff might want to pay attention and think about that if we've got some highly secure stuff. Might need to turn the Bluetooth off in the coffee shop. Okay, we're going to look at the threat from a different perspective now, which is more of a people threat, I think. It's what happens when you have some bad actors inside a company. I'm not sure. People still struggling with inside kind of theft these days too?
Yep. It's still the worst problem is insider threat. Well, not the insider. Phishing is still a big problem, but your biggest problem comes from people inside. And this is an article that's called A Threat from Within. It's out of Security Today. And it was written by Cammie Dukes, who's a director of business development at AMAG Technology. And while this article was specifically written for the banking industry, I looked at it and I said, this is actually appropriate for any sort of company. And insiders at a bank, they can access account numbers, social security numbers, passwords, any of that stuff that can actually be copied. And you and I both know you just put it on a little thumb drive, walk out the front door, it can be sold at big profits. And so what this article basically does is look at risk profiling for employees. And it's using analytic tools that you can build a risk profile. And they were saying that people are basically creatures of habit. They have a daily work routine. They log on at the same time. They go to the same place. And so these analytical tools can actually start to understand people's behavior. So if Mike Magid is showing up from 8 in the morning till 5 at night, all of a sudden he shows up at 1 o'clock in the morning, and instead of going to, say, security, he's over in accounts payable. Something is wrong, and you want to have red flags. And so what they're saying is you can develop a risk score for each individual. Let's say it's on a scale of 1 to 5, and every day you're at a 3. All of a sudden, Mike Matchett goes up to a 7, something is wrong. And so they're taking a look at profiles. And they're saying one of the biggest thing is to always use the least privileged access. Don't give access to anybody, to any place that they shouldn't be at. But it says security teams need to know who in each department requires access to what data. And the use of risk profiling can increase the level of security. And given the nature of companies out there, you've got to have some analytic tools that tell you when somebody is stepping out of their normal habits of work. So a good article, and it talks about profiling.
Interesting. And that article can be found under Insider Threat, but you'll get 50 articles if you type that in, or Threat Within, which should come up with this article right at the top. The threat from within, definitely a people problem. So we keep touching on that. It's not always a technology problem. But, you know, I have to say, Warren, as you're describing that, it sounded a little Big Brother-ish to me too, that someone's going to profile what I'm doing. And if I start to actually be creative and do something different someday, the security guy's going to start looking over my shoulder.
Well, I guess it is. But if it's my company, I want to know if somebody is doing something they shouldn't be doing. I mean, it's it is a little Big Brotherish. I think you can certainly read into it, but I think an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure to stop it before it happens.
Definitely least privileged access is a good policy to do that. Looking to see if someone is doing some really big changes in behavior would be worth tracking as well. I'm just wondering how far you take that with a machine learning algorithm to profile people. Yep. And how useful that could be. There is another security problem out there, though, that is bigger than the insider threat today. Obviously, it's phishing and things that lead to ransomware. So here you've got some more information on ransomware. And we are learning here today that people are still paying their ransoms, which only encourages more ransomware. Why are people still paying it in this day and age?
It's a great article. It's called 99 Ransomware Problems and Decryptors Ain't One of Them. Okay. And it's out of a source called Careers Info Security. And basically, people pay ransom for four reasons. Hush money. You know, they prevent the security from actually becoming public knowledge, because once it's public knowledge, your stock tanks and all, you lose a lot of business. Naming and shaming. Posting a victim's name in a data leaks, and so people don't want to. What was that one where they had that site where all sorts of adults were doing hanky panky, and they were going to release everybody's name, and oh god, people were just up in airs about that. So they pay not to have their name released, and also they pay to prevent the leak from becoming public. They pay the data, and once they've leaked a little bit, they pay it. So, and then the last one is auction prevention. They want to prevent the data from being auctioned off. And right. Ransomware is not going on. And there was a terrific quote in there by Corey Roach, who is a CISO at the University of Utah. And I'll read it for you exactly. It says, if you were running a business that had 80 to 90% profit margins and kept growing every month, would you change? And the answer is no. Okay. It is extremely, extremely profitable. And here's a sad thing. There was a story that just came out a couple of days ago about a company in Europe where their files were encrypted, and a lady actually died because they could not unencrypt her medical files, and they had to send her to a different hospital, and she ended up passing away because of a ransomware attack. So this has now gone from a place where it's money, where it's actually life-threatening. So ransomware is not going away, Mike. Don't pay it, but it's going to be here for a while.
All right, so this is ransomware. If you type in ransomware on the IT Weekly newsletter site, you're going to find almost 300 articles, Warren. This will be one of the more current ones, but if you want this article in particular, you can also type in and search for why change. Why change? Because if you don't change, you're going to get hacked. That's the reason. You've got a whole bunch of security articles here. This is a security-themed show, and it's sort of sneaking up on me that way. We've got problems when we bring devices into our house now. So we bring in our IoT devices, we bring in our Edges and our Alexas and our fully connected things like refrigerators and coffee pots, and they start to be hackable, the Nest thermometer, the baby camera, and all that rest of stuff. And we talked a couple articles about that recently. This one is actually going a little bit farther and not saying people can hack one of these devices, but these devices are starting to almost look like they're programmed to be hacking you. What is going on there? Are devices taking over now too?
They are. And it turns out it's an article. It's called Alexa Invaded My Printer and I'm Not Happy About It, out of Review Geek. And when I first read this article, I thought, that's no big deal. Alexa ended up talking to a printer. What's the big deal? Well, it turns out it really is a big deal. If you have a smart home with lots of IoT devices around, think about it. You got something in your baby's room, you got a doorbell, a security camera, a water detector, weather indicators, refrigerators, stoves, TV, phones. You get the picture. There's a lot of these things. And this is actually talking about Alexa actually went out and talked to a printer without him ever giving permission for Alexa to do that. The next thing he knows is Alexa is sending him a message saying, you know, your toner is out. You're almost out of paper. And it dawned on him, this is not good. So people are getting really nervous about Alexa and all these other devices listening all the time. And something like this is not going to allay any of those fears. And he says, Alexa does give you the ability to turn off these notifications once they've been linked. But it's like we talked about dark data last week.
Right.
You know,
right.
You have dark devices. You have devices that are attached to Alexa that you're not even aware of. And so how do you disconnect something that you don't know is connected? And so what he's talking about is that these devices are almost becoming the hackers. And I thought, you know, this is really scary. It's just in time for Halloween. So we got to be aware of that. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting that Alexa is out there listening and hooking and talking to things that you're not even aware of.
What I'm waiting for is for, you know, one person's Alexa to start connecting to devices next door, and then you end up with an ability to control their refrigerator or control their doorknob or whatever else. Also, you play a sophisticated game of ringing someone else's doorbell just from your own living room, right? Ding-dong, ditch it, but you don't have to virtually. You could just, maybe that's a good thing in this era of pandemic, so you don't have to actually go and touch someone's doorknob. You can just hack it remotely. Okay, we're going to call that Bad Alexa or Smart Home. Smart Home will give you a few more articles. Bad Alexa will give you this one word, Bad Alexa. Bad Alexa. Okay, and we got, you're still on the security theme here. Now, we've talked a bunch of different things about security already today. Let's talk a little bit about how you manage security and how you evolve it. Look at it from maybe more of a proactive perspective. When we're doing software, we do DevOps, which is the agile approach today. And I understand you've got an article here that might talk about how we apply sort of that agile DevOps perspective to security. How can you do that? How can you make security that agile and responsive? Yep.
This is called 6 Lessons IT Security Can Learn from DevOps. And it's an interesting article because they're trying to get security to look at security in the way that DevOps looks at developing applications. And now you're finding that DevOps is absolutely the standard for software development. And one of the unique aspects is that software development, in many, many cases, is modular. Security doesn't happen to be like that. And so each section of DevOps is you can pull out these sections and put them together based on what you need at the time. And so you can use whatever's developed and works well. And then if you have to, you can write new ones. But he says security needs to think in modular terms. Use what works before developing any new stuff. Stop thinking about security as a marathon and think about sprints. One issue at a time and respond quickly to any CVEs that come out or malware revisions. Build a tool chain for security and select those components and processes that fit the issue. And it's the whole thing about being modular. Develop continuous development. Don't wait and have a release date of 1st of December. Let these releases go on as you get them. And just whenever the components are updated, release them right then and there. Make sure you tell the story of why you're doing this security update. Don't just come out and say, we're going to do this. People relate more if you tell them why you're doing a policy or a governance or something that has been changed. And he says, get into this idea of continuous testing and continuous improvement. It says, doing a enterprise testing at one time isn't required, but just get a process of continuously testing this stuff. Occasionally, you have to do an enterprise test, but for the most part, just continuous testing, continuous improvement is going to work.
So continuous, agile, think in terms of sprints, which are how software developers say, for example, a 2-week iteration approach to developing features that would keep your security response pretty agile. So DevOps.
Yeah, just think about Microsoft when having patch Tuesdays. Wouldn't it be a lot better if they just bring out these patches as they occur as opposed to having, you know, 97 of these downloaded and you turn on your computer and says, please wait. And it goes away for 20 minutes while it downloads all this. So just continuous improvement, continuous updates.
The world is moving that way as you subscribe more and more to software as a service and managed services where someone else is running the software. And they continuously update those things in the background without you having to do uploads or patches on your side on a incremental or recurring basis. So DevOps is definitely the way the world is moving. SecDevOps sounds like the way security should start to think about how to organize their own internal approach or project management theory. Now, our last article today, talking about disaster recovery and business continuity, we are always concerned that people don't understand the difference between those things. We're always concerned that people never test their plan. What should we be keeping an eyeball on?
This is an article out of Dark Reading. It's called Rethinking Resilience, Tips for Your Disaster Recovery Plan. And Mike, you know, you and I both know that disaster recovery and business continuity, they're not cool. They're not the exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're not technology that people want to talk about ever. It's just boring. And nobody cares about disaster recovery or business continuity until Sally, the hurricane hits, the Western fires, the flooding, bad things happen. And so companies have this idea of a write and forget these policies. They've got to be updated all the time. And so you've got to make sure that your DR plans are up to date and they're tested. And here's the interesting thing. 70% of all companies have implemented some sort of DR plan within the last 2 years. And this article really talks about having contingencies. He says, remember, there's no generic boilerplate for your company. You've got to understand what your risk is, what the governance requirements are. Understand RTO and RPO, recovery point objectives, recovery time objectives. That's a very big deal. If you want to be something within a 1 second, or can you stand a minute or an hour or something like that? also, you've got to get strong executive support for any of these business continuity and disaster recovery plans, and also get the business units involved. This is not an IT problem. IT is responsible for it, but your business units have a big say in that. The other big thing is, do not assign a task to a specific person, because if that person gets sick, he's like a flood, you can't get out, you're hold. You want to assign that to a role. You want to have a subnote saying that Mike Matchett or Warren Avery is involved in it, but don't assign it to a specific person. And then have disaster levels. There's a big difference between having a bathroom catch on fire and having Hurricane Sally come through. All disasters are not the same. You've got to do it. And so the goal of a disaster recovery and a business continuity plan is to reduce the confusion. And Mike, I'm telling you, you and I both know that when a disaster hits, you've got to have some sort of plan to reduce the confusion. And what you don't want to have is that disaster to turn into chaos. And by having a good disaster plan, good business continuity, and having people understand the roles, it's still going to be confusing, but not nearly as bad as you didn't have anything in plan. So a good article about rethinking that whole plan.
Man, 70% of all companies in the last 2 years have activated their DR plans in one way or another. That's yep. just amazing to me, right?
Yep, yep.
If you think about how disasters can come in all different kinds, shapes, and sizes, as we've talked about here, just in our fire, flood, pandemic, hurricane discussion about our own lives, right? We've got disasters coming from different directions. Definitely helps to reduce confusion. You're going to look for articles on the IT Weekly newsletter with the keyword disaster recovery if you want a lot of them, or one word, rethink DR if you just want this particular article. Which brings us to the end of our list. Warren, that was a lot of security articles. Is this really just the theme going on this week? Is that...
I think it is because of, you know, the horrible fires they've had in the West in Northern California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho. Take a look at Hurricane Sally, the flooding. I mean, they were saying that some city in the panhandle, they got 30 inches of rain in less than 4 hours. There's no amount of surface area that's going to absorb that. And that water will start to flood in, and you've got to be prepared. So the newsletter sort of reflects what's happening, not only in the industry, but in the world. And we try to look at those articles that help you understand why you have to solve these problems. So hopefully next week we'll be more into operations and other areas, but this week just happened to be a security issue. So
yeah. When is pizza week, Warren? When do we get to, I don't know. So I'm looking for the positive week here coming up. Okay. If you want to subscribe to the IT Weekly newsletter, I know you're changing formats. We're going from weekly emails to some other ways to distribute the information on a more timely basis. What should someone do just if they want to keep subscribing to this?
Mike, 20 years ago, we started off as a weekly newsletter with, you know, 8 to 20 articles. Then about 10 years ago, we went to twice weekly. But even then, we're getting, you know, 25 to 30 articles. And we figured there's got to be a better way to do that. So we put a thing on our website called What's What in the Last 24 Hours. Go to itweeklynewsletter.com. You click on that, and you'll see the 8 to 12 articles that we have just from the last 24 hours. So every morning you come in, you get a cup of coffee, click on What's What, and you'll be able to keep abreast of what's going on. And these are articles, Mike, that if you had the time, you could go out there and find these, because we have over 500 sources. And you know that there's good articles in Information Week, Computer World, blah, 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 blah. We go out there and we find this for you. So a quick check every morning will give you a good feeling for the pulse of what's happening in the industry. So go to IT Weekly Newsletter. We don't send it out twice a week anymore, but we update it every single day.
I'm not going to give you a hard time about the name then. You know,
okay, I know.
The weekly newsletter. But if you start to think of the IT Weekly Newsletter as the place where you go on the web to find the material, the newsletter is the website, essentially. You can go there every day and see what's new on a daily basis now coming to you, just kind of like your old newspaper. Maybe you should change the name to the IT Daily Newspaper. Don't go changing the name, Warren. This week's question, then, I'm going to ask about, since these are all security articles, let's try to keep it a little lighter. I'm going to ask about your personal stories of interfacing with something like Alexa or Echo or Dot or whatever it is you have on your smartphone or in your house. How did that interface go wrong for you? If you'd like to answer that, come to our website at smallworldbigdata.com. Look for the podcast. There is a contact form there, which will allow you to communicate directly with all of us right here on the crew. And you can also get in touch with us a couple other ways at smallworldbigdata.com. If you like what you're hearing today, please subscribe. We're on all the podcast indices, and give us a good rating so others can find us too and listen to it. With that, Warren, thanks for being here again today. We'll definitely have you back next week.
Mike, always a pleasure. You take care of yourself, be safe, and we'll have some great articles for you next week.
All right. Looking forward to it. And now I can keep up with it every single day. Take care.
This has been a Small World Big Data Podcast.